Each and every Wednesday at this time, we talk with the manager of the Boston Red Sox, Terry Francona. Terry, good afternoon. Andy Brickley is seated alongside as well. How are you?
Good afternoon, guys. How you doing?
Doing great, thanks. You know, we were talking to Jason Varitek earlier this morning about how so far, and I'm knocking wood as I say this, so far this year your team's had relative good health. I guess these sort of things always catch up with you sooner or later, though, don't they?
Well, I think over the course of a long season, you're going to get nicked up. I think you have to almost expect some of that. I mean, it's certainly hard to put your finger on it in spring training or the first month of the season when, you know, like a Josh Beckett is throwing so well. You know, you don't wait for a you know, evulsion, whatever the heck they call it, to happen. But those things do happen. So you try to always stay prepared and stay one step ahead. So when something does happen, you know, you can make a decision and not have it be a reactionary one.
Well, let's talk about the two most recent guys, and you mentioned Beckett. Any word yet on his Friday start at this point?
No, the best, you know, we're going to certainly be cautious. I think that's the only way to go about it. We haven't said anything about his start, nor are we prepared to yet, but I will tell you, we're going to be cautious. When you do see him pitch, he's going to be ready.
J.D. Drew hit that right field bullpen wall awfully hard last night, still able to play four innings for you after he hit it. Have you got any word today on how he's doing?
Yeah, he checked in a little bit ago, and he's actually doing okay, which is real good news because, we all kind of saw how he hit it, and it was his lower back, and, you know, that cement padding or steel padding is what it is. It's hard. And he hit it at a weird angle. That fence is at such a height that it is really difficult for outfielders. I think sometimes it can be an advantage to us because we play out there so much, but when you hit it at that angle, it hurts. He called in, and he's feeling pretty good. Now, we're going to try to stay away from starting him, but I wouldn't be surprised if we actually have him available to pinch hit tonight, which is really good news.
And is it as simple as just plugging Willie Mopena into right field, Terry?
Yes, that's exactly what we'll do.
And how does that affect your batting order moving forward?
You know, usually on those nights, we move Coco up into the two-hole and hit Euclid's fifth. And it's been pretty consistent in the way we've done it. I don't see any reason to do it differently tonight.
You know, we talked to J.D. about how hard right field at Fenway Park is just to learn. And I don't know in the course of 2 months if you ever get a true feeling for it. Is this something that it might not be till next year till he's totally comfortable playing out there?
Well, he's pretty conscientious out there. He actually asked us at one point in spring training if we could rig up a system that could simulate Fenway. And although we talked to the front office about it and talked to DeMarlo and gave it a lot of thought, we just couldn't come up with anything that just, you know, that without making a mockery of it, you know, but it was pretty cool that he asked. So he's obviously cares. You can tell, you know, even when he's going through a tough time at the plate, when he makes an error, you can see what really bothers him. And that's nice from a team standpoint because you know he cares about playing the game correctly.
Terry, you mentioned moving Crisp around a little bit along with Euclid. I would think a guy like Euclid, with his flexibility and the ability to be able to bat him in different spots in the order, I would imagine that's a pretty nice asset to have. But what kind of challenges does that create for him as far as his responsibility in the batting order?
Well, what it does, in my opinion, is by moving Euclid, it keeps the rest of the batting order pretty much the same. And we really strive to do that. And again, because Uke can do so many different things, and I'm not sure we want to hit Uke fifth all year. You know, hitting him second is a real strong point. But when you hit him fifth on certain nights, it keeps that consistency in the batting order. It keeps Lowell sixth. It keeps Varitek seven. Again, we're trying to stretch the batting order out as much as we can. And whether a guy plays or whether he rests or whether he's banged up and still be able to score enough runs to win.
It almost seemed like for Wake last night, it was two bad pitches.
Yeah, you know what? He threw a 2-0 fastball to Inge. You know what? Give Inge a little credit. He hit it out to right field because that's what he was going to have to do with it. To get to Ordonez's home run, you know, we have to play Sheffield on the line because that's where he hits 9 out of 10 balls. We've taken away so many hits because we play him and the way we play him, then he hits a ball in the hole that Mikey can't quite get to, which, you know, I understand. That's the way we play him. We choose to do that. And then Ordonez hits a 3-run homer and, you know, you're kind of going, oh, man, you know, if you know, what is it, wishes and nuts, or you know what I'm going with. It's a shame because Wake threw the ball so well and they got a four spot, and the way Verlander was throwing, four seemed like a lot.
I saw the look on Wake's face as you were headed out to the mound in the eighth inning. Was your decision almost entirely based on the fact that Ordóñez was up next and he just seems to have Wake's number?
Yeah, if he'd have got Jeff out, we were going to let him face him because I thought he was throwing the ball well. But once they get a runner on, and the history there, I mean, he's taken some pretty good swings at Wake. And it's just something you can't ignore, and he got us far enough in the game where, you know, again, it just didn't seem to make sense to me.
The tremendous starting pitching and, of course, the bullpen certainly doing their jobs. The offense for you guys has been there too, Terry, despite really, you know, what we're accustomed to seeing from a Manny Ramirez. Do you see signs from him that he's starting to find that hot bat that is that we've become so used to seeing?
I hope so. And, again, I think the biggest sign is his history. You know, you don't do what he's done for this many years. And, again, as long as you're okay physically, which he is, he's taking more aggressive swings. Not quite getting to the point where he wants to. You can tell, but he's getting closer. We certainly haven't clicked on all cylinders offensively. I think we all acknowledge that. But the name of the game is to try to win and be one run better, and I think we've done a pretty good job of that.
We know that it's been kind of a work in progress for Daisuke in terms of in-between starts and what you do and what you don't do. Whatever it is you've done here the last couple of starts, he seems to have found a rhythm and a certain comfort level that we weren't seeing earlier.
Yeah, I think the touch and feel on the baseball is really improved and gotten a little more consistent. And I give a lot of people credit. I mean, Dice K right at the top of the list, and John Farrell, and even Dice K's interpreters for the help they give, and Jason Veritek for his input. I mean, it all comes down to you know, guys doing their job. But again, with new people, you're always trying to find strengths and eliminate weaknesses. And again, when you have a little bit of a cultural or a language barrier that you have to get through, sometimes it takes a little longer.
I read the transcript of Dice K's comments after the game the other night, and one of the things that was almost a throwaway line for him, but I hadn't thought about it, was the difference in the baseball and how he's getting used to how it feels. How different is it in Japan and here?
I haven't seen a Japanese baseball from what I understand. Well, I actually have. I apologize. I saw one in Toronto. And from what I understand, to take it a step further, the home team chooses the baseball in Japan. So I think they use a number of different baseballs. Now, again, I could be wrong, but that's what I was told. And regardless, the seams are different. And I know Okajima and Daisuke both commented on that in spring training that right away, that was something that jumped out as, wow, we got to get used to this baseball. And again, the amount of attention they were getting, that's not something I need to you know, I try to downplay everything because they were getting so much attention, but it was something that they brought to our attention right away.
As well as Cora has been playing for you, Terry, how hard is it to not run him out there every day?
I think we're doing it probably just about right. We're getting, you know, again, Pedroia's starting to play pretty good baseball.
Right.
So we're getting pretty good baseball from two guys. I think it's a real easy thing to do. You get a guy that has a hot hand, and you run him into the ground. So you do two things. You run the guy that's hot into the ground, and the guy that you want to have play pretty good, you show no confidence in him, so you mess up on two fronts. I don't want to do that.
You changed the middle of your infield this year from what you had last year, where you had Gonzalez and Loretta last year and obviously Lugo and Dustin most of the time this year. Has the defensive play been what you expected? Because I got to be honest, it's been better than I expected some nights.
I think we've been pretty much like we thought. I mean, we know, you know, getting Lugo is a different player from Alex Gonzalez, very different. I really enjoy the speed. I know it probably shocks people to hear that. I love what he can do on the bases. It's intriguing, and it gives us something we haven't had. And along with Coco, all of a sudden we've got some ways to beat you without having to hit a three-run homer, which is good. Pedroia and Alex are solid at second. I mean, they both leave their feet very well. They both are very heads up. They make the plays they're supposed to make.
I'm not sure this will ever be the go-go Red Sox, but, you know, you are running more than what we're used to seeing. Is it simply because you got guys who can?
Exactly. And we've said that from day one. You know, we're not going to turn David Ortiz into Maury Wills. That would be silly. You know, you try to play to your team's strengths, and that's what we'll do. I mean, it's such a fashionable thing for a manager to say, I want to be aggressive. Of course we do. But you want to do it where it helps your team. And for us to put guys like Ortiz in motion doesn't always help our team.
You know, you mentioned John Farrell earlier, and I've been thinking about Farrell a lot and the success that your pitchers have had, and they get most of the credit, and deservedly so. But, look, if they were bad, the pitching coach would be under scrutiny. So if they're good, why doesn't he get some of the credit as well?
Well, I think that's the way we choose to do it, too. I think when things go well, the player, we love giving the players praise, and I hope you guys do, too. It's a good way to do it. And when things go bad, we, you know, we'd like to be there to take some of the pressure off of them and take some of the responsibility. So we're okay with that. I think that's a good way to do it. But John is, in my opinion, fabulous. And I get to see him a lot more than everybody else because I'm around him 20 hours a day. But he's prepared. He communicates. He's solid on so many fronts that I appreciate.
I want to go back to the Dice case start the other night and the complete game. How much of your decision-making process was also involved with looking at how much you used your bullpen over the weekend, looking forward, how much you might have to use your bullpen if you have to piece together a start, for instance, for Beckett this week?
We certainly try to think about those things, but in saying that, we would never let a pitcher go farther than we think he's supposed to. We didn't see a reason to take him out. And I got to ask if my decision changed after the score changed. I said, no, we were going to send him back out with the score 3-1. Now, we had Pat Forman up, but it didn't necessarily mean if Dice K gave up a base runner, he was coming out. This kid was throwing. There was no reason to take him out of the game. He was in his delivery, wasn't elevating the fastball. The one thing we try to stay away from is a pitcher, when they're a little bit fatigued, making a mistake that costs us a game. I mean, you're asking a guy to execute a pitch maybe in the eighth or ninth that they're just not quite consistently capable of doing, then in my opinion, you don't leave him in the game.
You got a couple more games with a very good team in the Detroit Tigers before you play New York and certainly Cleveland at the end of the month. But you also have Atlanta in between. Is it difficult or are there challenges when you have a National League team thrown at you right in the middle of your schedule like that?
I don't think for the players. I think for the staff, the preparation becomes a little bit lengthier because there's not that comfort zone of knowing who you're playing. Even guys, you know, like the Yankees, it's all those bats, but we still know who they are. And they know us. You just have to play better than them. You know, you get Atlanta right now, and they're playing real well with some new guys that we haven't seen. So that makes for some lengthier preparations.
June 8th, I think, is your first road game in a National League park. At what point do you start working your pitchers out with a bat in their hand?
You know what, Dale, not a lot. What we're going to do is only the starting pitchers. You know, the relievers, they'll give me a day or two of grief because they all want to go out and try to hit home runs. And it never fails. Somebody will blow their back out. So the starting pitchers will start out in the cage. First, they'll hit off the tee just because we don't want to interrupt their pitching. You know, it never fails. You know, you stay on them, and somebody swings too hard and their back hurts or their side hurts. They'll hit off the tee to kind of get their hands back feeling for the bat. We'll bunt a little bit. We'll take some dry swings, and then we'll take them out in the field 3 or 4 days and hit. But it's not going to be extensive. There's just too much to lose and not enough to gain.
I seem to remember a home run hitter in Jose Canseco that tried to pitch and hurt his back.
Yeah, it doesn't work. You know what? And we will stay on them like you can't believe because it never fails. They get a little out over their skis and they want to hit one over the monster. And if we, you know, again, if Josh Beckett wants to hit a home run like he did last year, good. But if we need them to pitch, and we need them to pitch all year, so we're going to sit on them pretty tight.
It's my fault that I don't know this. I don't know enough about Japanese baseball and the different leagues to even know. Did Dice K hit in Japan?
Same as here. There were two different, interleague. He hit a home run, and he was very quick to point that out. And I actually saw it on, was it YouTube? I pulled it up this spring, and I called him in and showed him. And this is when we were playing some National League teams, and he was going to hit, and I was explaining to him that he wasn't going to swing. And I pulled up the home run. I said, I know you can do it. You're not swinging. And he got a chuckle out of it, and he did a good job of not swinging.
And most of the time, I'm not a big fan of interleague play anyway, and I'm particularly not a fan of changing how teams approach it. I mean, your pitchers don't hit all year long, and all of a sudden they got to put a bat in their hand. I mean, most of the time you're better off having them stand there and take three and go sit down.
You're almost right, and I agree with you completely. You prepare for 162 games, and you have your team, and then you go play a handful of them where you can't use your whole team, or you're asking guys to do things that they don't do. I don't agree with it, and it's unfair. And, again, last year we had a very good record in interleague play, but we're not the same team because we have probably the best DH in the league who either needs to play first or you give him a day of rest.
Well, that was the other part of it, obviously, where all of a sudden David Ortiz has to start getting that glove back out and oiling it up again because he's got to do something he doesn't normally have to do.
Yeah, it puts us in a disadvantage. So what we try to do is, again, we usually in the past have picked a day, and you'll give Uke, Lowell, and David all a day off. Hopefully they can use it to their advantage, and we keep guys sharp, and we win games, and you do the best you can.
Well, other than the obvious that you've already covered with JD probably not starting for you tonight and Willie Mo going in, any other lineup changes?
No, Pedroia's back in there. I don't think anything different. Jason's back in there after a night when Dougie caught. So we're doing okay. We're getting everybody. We're trying to get everybody at bats, keep everybody sharp where they can give us some help. And you know, again, if somebody does go down, we can have somebody that can fill in and give us some pop.
Man, I was thinking as I was watching last night, if I'm Dustin Pedroia, I thank you for not making me go out there and face Verlander with the stuff he had going.
Yeah, you know what? He was pretty special last night. And that doesn't mean, I think sometimes people maybe misconstrue it when we say after a game, you know, you tip your hat to a guy. That doesn't mean we don't think we can win. You always try to stay within reach where if he does make a mistake, we can beat him. But the kind of stuff he was throwing last night, it was pretty awesome. I mean, you saw the fastball, but his off-speed was just as devastating. And then when they spread it out, you know, then we really got in trouble.
Finally, before we let you go, I got to ask about the comeback. I mean, you know, you're not going to see many of those in the course of your Red Sox career. There hadn't been a ninth inning comeback of that size in like 9 years here. Did you go into that ninth inning thinking, oh, yeah, sure, we'll score six on these guys?
You know, quite honestly, probably not. I mean, down deep, you always think, and this is just the way we've been brought up, until it's over, you think, you know, we'll find a way to win. Those are a little tougher to, you know, you're kind of thinking about your pitching and saving your pitching and things like that. And then as the inning progresses, you're like, okay, you know what? You've been here sitting here kind of stoic all day. Don't get caught up in the craziness. So I tried to just tell myself to sit there. We didn't have any moves to make. You know, they didn't have any left-handers. We had the guys in that were in, so let's go ahead and see what we can do. But it's hard not to get excited as you see the inning progressing.
Oh, I got to come clean. I flipped over to the Players Championship when it was going into the ninth inning, Dale. So
we can't do that. So, again, you just try to stay consistent and play nine innings. I mean, there's something to be said for that. You know, just even if you don't win, maybe you make them use a bullpen guy that they didn't want to use that might win a game for you down the road. Who knows? So there's a lot to be said for just playing the game out.
And you've had two games this year. I can think of the Halladay game in Toronto and this game where, you know, you got a pitcher who is just dealing it up there and a manager makes a move that is probably a perfectly legitimate move for his team at that time, and it changes everything for you.
Yeah, you know, I actually, you know, was looking back at, because I know Sam was taking a lot of heat after that game. I know what he's thinking. You know, he had told his guy, hey, if somebody gets on, I'm taking you out, because he was in foreign territory. He hasn't been a starter very long. They, you know, because you're having success, you don't want to wear a guy out. You want to keep him having success. And so I understood what he was doing. But when it backfires like that, that's when you lose some sleep.
I know you haven't made the decision on the status of Beckett, but I know you've planned for if he can't start, will it be from within or will you have to go from without?
Well, again, we haven't said anything about that yet. I kind of laugh when I see people prognosticating, but I don't know where they're getting it from because they didn't get it from me. We got a couple different scenarios. We'll communicate it with our players first, and certainly Theo and I have talked a lot about this. We'll get this figured out here. We just haven't announced what we're going to do because doesn't help us to announce it yet.
Terry, we always appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, guys, have a good week.
Thanks. That is Red Sox manager Terry Francona joining us from his office there at Fenway.